All right, welcome to the Interstate of Music podcast. Today I've got somebody that does a little something with round metal things. I think they're called cymbals. I want to welcome to the show today Andrew Tamulinas. He is the brand manager for Zildjian Cymbals and Drumsticks. Welcome to the Interstate of Music podcast, Andrew.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. It's awesome to be here.
Well, I mean, even if it's not awesome, I'm glad you said that. I don't want to start where you're at right now because I just kind of gave you your title. I'd like to back it up way back. What have you always been a drummer or loving of the percussion? I see a guitar behind you. Like, what is your musical background and what kind of got you in to that passion and love of music?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, probably like a lot of people, the first thing I wanted to do was play guitar. So definitely had a guitar as a kid, you know, always kind of liked it, never particularly very good at it. And then, you know, school band comes around and all those guys are hitting things. That looks like a lot more fun. So gravitated towards the drums for sure pretty early on. Always been a drummer all through, you know, high school, college. Briefly went to college for music education and then kind of switched over to communications and film studies. But just drums have always been a part of my life, you know, for fun, playing with friends, that kind of thing.
And you kind of talked about it. I mean, obviously percussion, you know, it can go a lot of different directions. You can be part of the jazz band at school. You can be part of the marching band. You can be part of, you know, all the different styles and different groups that kind of break off of percussion, because there's so much. If there's one thing about drums is it does kind of play into a lot of categories of music within the education world. Where did you kind of find yourself fitting into, and what did you kind of really grow into, kind of that high school, college side of things? Because if you were going to get into music education, like, how many different aspects of it were you participating in?
Yeah, so my high school was fairly small, and so didn't have a huge percussion department, not a lot of people back in the back of the band room. So really kind of had to be the go-to person for a lot of stuff. But I definitely gravitated towards drum set. And I think the music education thing for me was just I knew that I wanted music to stay a part of my life when I left high school. But I didn't really know what that meant. Like, I didn't really know what was available. And just sort of as a knee-jerk reaction, like, well, I see this music teacher in front of me, you know, every day, a week, yeah. Maybe I want to be a music teacher. But really it was just wanting to keep music as a part of my life. And I was always a drum set guy. So I played in a lot of bands, a lot of stuff like that. And I think, you know, going into college at the time, is the stupid as it sounds, you buy all these cymbals and drumsticks and drum heads and all this stuff, but you never think about the brands and that these are actually companies that people work for.
Right.
So I started to become aware of, you know, Vic Firth comes out to UMass and films a drumline feature, and I'm in the drumline and I see a guy with a camera and I think, huh, okay, maybe there's another angle of music that I should be exploring.
So when you were doing drumline, what were you actually playing?
My first year was in the Pit, which was awesome. Okay. We did the Who's Tommy, which was just super epic halftime show, like geeking out. It was great. And then sophomore, junior, senior, I was in the Bassline.
That's unbelievable. So what's, did you go to a big, a bigger school or smaller?
For college? University of Massachusetts, Amherst.
Oh, UMass. Okay, fantastic. So at what stage, you know, you talk about switching out of, you know, kind of the music direction, at what point did you start to say, okay, I'm gonna go out there, I'm gonna start kind of focusing on a career path? And what did that look like for you? You kind of mentioned communications, that kind of thing. What did that look like, and what was that path, and how did you try to keep music in your life? Was it you were in a band, you know, what kind of thing?
Yeah, I think, so I switched my major to communications and film studies, and I just really, you know, I had a video camera, I had a still camera, and I was going to every show I could possibly go to. I was shooting for the regional paper out in Springfield, Massachusetts. I was shooting for the school paper, and just trying to, you know, get into concerts and kind of cut my teeth on concert photography and all that kind of stuff. and
at
like
minimum,
I said,
you got backstage passes, right?
Yeah, you know, that was not too bad. It was
That's
just like
angle.
exposure to that whole world that I just had not been aware of up until that point, and really just really hooked me, to be honest. And back to the drumline thing, there, Vic Firth did come out every year and do like a big, they did a big college feature where they would hop around to different college drumlines and do film their show. So every year, like clockwork, we would see the Vic Firth guys come with the video cameras. And so that kind of became my in for Vic Firth. You know, sent emails, made calls, just really said, hey, you know, when I graduate, would love to help out. Paid, unpaid, whatever you got,
right?
Hand me a camera. I would love to shoot drummers. I would love to do this kind of stuff. And that kind of was my foot in the door, that connection with that team through UMass.
That's awesome. And what, so how long did you do that? And what did those projects look like? Was it always going and kind of following, you know, the drumstick side of life and just going out there and getting those, was it all live, or was there any like kind of set photography, you know, product video, or was it all kind of go out there on site and really get that live momentum? Like, what was kind of that side of it for you?
In college, it was a lot of just going with the flow, doing live stuff, shooting concerts, things like that. When, you know, in the summertime would hit, I didn't march drum corps, but I had some friends who did, and I would just for the heck of it, just to get some photos in my portfolio and figure out, you know, how all that stuff worked, I would just go out to the training camps and stick around for a day or two and try to take shots of the drum line and try to take some, you know, lifestyle type product shots in the moment and send them off to the companies and just kind of getting my feet wet in that whole world. And then when I actually started at Vic, it was really a lot of the same stuff. If a band would come through Boston, you know, we would go down to the club and we'd have, you know, a shot list. It's like, here's the sticks they use. We want to get an interview where they talk about why they like this drumstick. And so really kind of a lot of the same stuff, but in the more official capacity.
And how much of that footage do you still actually have? Do you have any like really cool footage that you still own that was kind of behind the scenes, backstage, blooper shit with some decent names out there that you want to kind of tell me about?
I have some good photos still from Green Day's American Idiot Tour at the Mullen Center at UMass. I had got some really good photos of that I had hung up on my wall for a while because I frankly just couldn't even believe I got the photo. And I think a lot of it is like when you finally...
That's fantastic.
You finally get into a place that has good lighting and you're like, oh my God, this is a good photo.
It's awesome.
So that was part of it. Yeah.
And were you shooting any video on that type of thing? Or was when you went and shot, was it all like, I'm doing still photography, I'm doing video for this, that kind of thing? It was always so on that. It was just click, 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 get as many damn pictures as you can, 'cause you're hoping one shows up.
Exactly. Yeah. They give you, I think, two songs and then they kick all the photographers out of the pit. So it was just like, take as many shots as you can, just look at them all later and figure out what you got and what you didn't get. The video stuff was usually dedicated shoot, like we're going to get video. And some of that older stuff is actually still, you know, on the Vic Firth YouTube channel. When I started, gentleman by the name of Mark Wessels, who a lot of people will know in the education circles, he did everything for the Vic Firth website. He was shooting all the video, editing all the video. And it was growing and growing. And so he kind of needed some help. And some of those earlier videos on the YouTube channel, you know, I still go back and watch them, the things that he edited or I edited or we worked on together. YouTube is great. There's a log of everything for better or worse.
Yeah. Depending on your age. I mean, I'm almost at that age where I am at that age. I'm 53. So I go back and I'm like, oh shit, really? There isn't that much when I was a kid on there, except big events and big stuff. I'm like, YouTube for me kind of just starts at a certain decade and kind of moves on, and I kind of miss some of it. So I just have to remember everything. So that's all right. Some stuff I remember, some stuff I don't, because it's probably better I don't. So as you kind of progress through it, when did you start to feel as though you were developing into a career path? Like, I mean, where it felt like this is what you wanted to do. This could pay the bills you know, this could pay rent. Like, at what point did it kind of click into that for you?
Honestly, I feel like the answer is right away. Like at Vic Firth.
Well, yeah, if you have seven roommates, you can pay rent with not a lot of money, right?
Yeah, exactly, right. When I started at Vic, it was, you know, it's such a super small team. And really, a lot of people didn't, you know, people would pull up to the building and be convinced they were in the wrong place. Like, this can't possibly be Vic Firth. Sure. It's just very small operation, smaller than people realize, not a lot of people. And so right away, you'd see people who have been here for their whole careers. So, and it was just, you know, it was a family. So I right away had a feeling that, hey, as long as I want to do this, I could do this.
Right.
And, you know, the way digital media was growing, is growing, continues to grow. Yeah, I'd say right from the jump, I knew that I could, you know, be in this industry for a long time if I wanted to. With Vic, which was a great opportunity. And also because the company was so small, everybody really kind of had a handle on everything. And there were like, this is my job, that's your job. We all had suggestions for products. We all tested things and gave feedback on what worked and what didn't. And it was more than just shooting photos or managing the website or answering phone calls or taking orders, whatever your job was. So yeah, super small, scrappy team, and really made me feel like, yeah, this is, you could do this for a long time. There could be a career here.
And did you, so through this time, were you playing in bands? Were you as a drummer, did you kind of turn that into something that you were doing as, you know, for side money, but did you ever think that was going to turn into something?
I think when I was younger, like right out of college, there was always that glimmer of hope, like, yeah, man, we're all going to quit our jobs one day. And it's just all it takes is one song.
I think I can get free drumsticks. So that helps, right?
I know a guy. I know a guy at Vic Firth. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's always that, you know, hey, wouldn't that be nice? But I think it was always just reality check. Like, hey, this is fun. You know, every couple weekends, you know, we'll go out around Boston, or hey, maybe we drive all the way down to New York and play a show. Like, that was a big deal. It was never big, but it was always fun.
Right. And are you doing any playing now with bands, or sitting in on, you know, for recordings or anything? What's your personal playing lifestyle now?
Yeah, it's been a weird year or two.
Yep.
And I'm sure I'm not the only one.
For about a year, right? Yeah.
Yeah. What my friends and I, who had been in a band previously, you know, we just kind of really every week we get together and play just for fun, pretty much, and then the occasional gig. We've really had to try to make that work remotely, and so, you know, recording drum tracks here and sending it off to the guitar player, and they throw something on it, and you know, over the course of a couple of months, we have a new song, and none of us had played any of it, one note of it together in the same room. So new ways of being creative, but yeah, not playing really out much.
Right. So tell me a little bit, you know, about Zildjian as far as just the history of the company and what that's meant to you to be a part of that, you know, that business and the quality that goes into it, and just, you know, some of the innovation that's come through the years that you've been there. Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, just like, I constantly slap myself and realize, like, this is a company that's turning 400 years old. This is a company that's turning 400 years old.
That's what blows my mind. It blows my mind that that's even possible. Like, I look back and I'm terrible at history, and I'm like, man, that's like dinosaurs, right? I mean, dinosaurs were alive 400 years ago. I didn't know somebody needed, you know, a set of symbols. It's so long to be a company, in any format, right? So number one, obviously there's been a little bit of innovation in 400 years, but tell me what kind of it has inspired you through that side of things, as far as what they constantly do. They certainly have not sat back and said, we're done, we've done it all, we're just going to keep on making these exact same symbols and sticks and all the rest of it. They're constantly innovating, and that is unique for a company that's been around as long as they have.
Yeah, I mean, constantly innovating is exactly the right way to say it. And I mean, just before we got on this podcast, I'm, you know, on the business side of things, I'm like, I'm looking through our roadmap, and we just, you know, it's a great problem to have. We have more like ideas, fully developed ideas, than we have time to launch. It's like, well, we can't slot this many things in next year. So when are we going to do this? I mean, it's just the folks who work on our innovation team, they just love what they do. And it's so obvious because they're cranking out, hey, I had this new idea. Like, oh, I walked past a tray of these blanks that I didn't know, you know, what we were going to do with them. And then I saw someone lathing one of these over there, and all of a sudden I put two and two together. And what if we did this? It's just like, people are constantly thinking about what comes next, which is like, for a company that's 400 years old, it'd be really easy to not do that. Like, it'd be really easy to say, hey man, we've got a Zildjian, we've got a custom, we've got K, we're good.
I mean, Coca-Cola has been the same recipe forever. And all they seem to do is like, they bring something out and it just doesn't do as well as Coca-Cola. And they, but you know, they throw something out there, it's bad. Zildjian keeps on coming out with something that is relevant and wanted and necessary in how music is changing, and being a part of that, the genres as they've evolved, and for the musician and the drummer, Zildjian keeps on nailing it, like time and time and time again.
Yeah, and it's a lot of it is the history. Like, we've made a lot of cymbals. We know what works, what doesn't. You know, we've failed at things that then we come back to 5 years later and go, hey, you know what? I think I know why that didn't work out so well, and I think I want to adjust something, and let's try this.
Or maybe even a little ahead of your time. You know, with that much innovation, sometimes you're just a little ahead of when the right time to launch it is.
K Custom Special Dry is a perfect example of a product that came out. You know, we thought like, this is really cool. It didn't quite catch on. You know, we discontinued it, and then all of a sudden, you know, those sounds, they started to pop. So we didn't put it out exactly the way it was. Those cymbals became thinner. The profiles got lower. So you get a little bit of a lower pitch from them. We adjusted them, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff that hits, and maybe it's not quite the time yet. And then we come back to it, and it's just the history. And that's the thing about the Zildjian family. They are really, really invested in, their personal history, the history of the family, but also the history of the company. And we have a log of everything we've ever tried, why it worked, why it didn't work. And we go back to stuff all the time.
I love that. Sure. And so where, as it sits right now, for the people that are kind of listening, and where do you guys do most of your innovation, design, manufacturing, you know, all of that? Where is that all kind of being handled right now?
It's 100% in Norwell, Massachusetts. So that's our headquarters, where we've been since the 70s, I believe. Moved from Quincy down into Norwell, and that's where our foundry is. We're smelting the metal there, creating the blanks, rolling, tempering, cupping, like making the cymbal soup to nuts. All of our design is there. All of our manufacture is there. Yeah, it's everything.
And when you talk about having that all in one place there, that's where you get that consistency, right? And that quality of consistency. You hear about drummers going into stores and wanting to hit every single cymbal that they're thinking about buying so that they find the exact one that they want out of five, you know, and they're like, yep, this is the one. Now it seems like there's so much more of a consistency across all of your cymbals that's not really how it's done like it used to be done, is it?
Yeah, that's a really great point. You know, we've got the same folks out there, you know, standing at the same lathes on first shift and standing at the same lathes on second shift. You know, they're lathing a K-Suite crash, weighing it out. They know what the spec should be. We've got the same folks standing in the back in the quality department that's hitting the cymbal before it goes out to printing. So there's a tight spec that we stick to. And it's definitely gotten tighter over time and more consistent over time because technology has gotten better and safer too. Like, these machines are now a lot safer to run than they were 20, 30, 40, 50, 300 years ago.
Right.
But there is definitely, there is something to be said about inconsistency too. And that's some of the things that we look into with some of even the new products we're working on now, of like, there are drummers out there who want to stand in front of a wall and say, here are 6 20-inch rides. I can't pick one. I'm going to get two. Because I like this quality about this one, and this one's got a little bit of a flange at the edge, and I really like how that trashes out the sound, and I want them both. So it's, again, that's something, you know, we're always changing, we're always evolving.
It's all that personal preference that you've got, that it just feels as though you're constantly catering to the musician and being the musicians that you are, knowing what, you know, a variety of personalities are out there, and trying to cater to the way they do that. And I think that that's also part of, it's not just about the cymbal and the sticks. It's about understanding the musicians and what they're looking for, and kind of keeping your, you know, ears open to what they have to say about it.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And, you know, the drummers, the customers, the people who are buying cymbals, going to the retailer, you know, talking to folks like you, we talk to you, you tell us what you're hearing, but artists too, like we have a huge artist roster, and they're, you know, they're playing with the latest pop artist on the radio who is doing something wildly different, and suddenly they need a different cymbal than they've ever needed before. Like, that's valuable information. And we have a lot of artists who help us innovate. Like, it's not just internal innovation. It's that extended family of artist relations for sure is huge.
That's awesome. And so if you were to kind of pinpoint what you think is next for Zildjian, some of the things that you guys have been talking about, no trade secrets here. I'm not looking to kind of, you know, make you think that we're just talking just us, but what's kind of next that you think is trending, some of the unique things people are doing on their own to cymbals to try to create a sound that you're like, let's actually turn this into something. What are some of those things that you think is going to stick and is going to be around long enough to actually produce something for?
Yeah, I mean, I think just the giant umbrella of like personalization, and not like I want to have my name on the cymbal, but just I want my cymbal to not necessarily be like anybody else's, like something that's a little bit unique and a little bit personal. And one of the things we're coming out with, just really, we're going to announce it at the beginning of October, so we're just a couple weeks away now. The Raw Crashes, which we tested in our concept shop on Zildjian.com, and then made some adjustments to based on what drummers thought of them.
We have one in our office. We actually have
one.
It is sweet. I asked that question and I wasn't even trying to lead to that. But it's exactly what you're talking about, that personalization, because there's a little bit of a randomness to that.
It's there's a huge amount of randomness. Like, no lie to say that no two of them, you know, there's a large bell version and a small bell version. If you buy the large bell, there's not going to be another one on earth that sounds exactly like it. They're just,
well,
too
I've got
many
one
variables.
I've got one of the large ones that there's not going to be another one on earth, and it's sitting in Jake Miller's office right now, and he's just waiting to smash on it. So I love that part of what you guys are doing. I love that you're putting yourself out there that way, because that's, I don't want to say it's risky, but it's so cool, because it is so not what you'd expect, or it, when you look at it, you're like, that's cool. Like, that's different. It, you know, I don't even have to hit it to know that that's cool. And it's going to give a sound that's going to be unique for a song, for a specific time in a show. Like, there's accent pieces to everything in life. Whether it's on your car, whether it's at your house, whether it's, you know, what you put in your Bloody Mary, there's that one thing. And that, I swear, that symbol's going to be like what that special little hot sauce that you put in your Bloody Mary. And somebody's going to hit it and you're going to be like, damn, what was that? Well, that is cool. And it's going to be tough for people to put their finger on it. And that's what's cool about it. I love that.
It's all of that for sound, but also like everything you just said about aesthetics too. Like, yes, people want something on their kit that's like, that just jumps out and looks awesome. Like, what the hell is he playing or she playing? Like, I gotta have that.
Right. I love it. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time today and being part of the show and all the support that Zildjian gives, not just to Interstate Music, but to musicians all over the world. I mean, you are 400 years old, and you've stayed the test of time because of the innovation, because of who you are as people and caring about musicians. And we certainly appreciate that because, you know, it's a musician's first world out there. I like to say we're just kind of, we're living in it and helping them, you know, make their next steps. And I think it's cool that you guys are kind of in that same mindset. It's been great to get to know you a little bit better. And thanks for being part of the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeff. It's a pleasure. And thanks for everything you all do. It's, you know, huge for us, obviously. So thank you very much.
That's awesome, Andrew. All right, this is the Interstate of Music podcast. And hey, pay attention to Zildjian. They got some cool stuff coming, as always. I know that might sound a little redundant, but pay attention to them because there's some things that you wouldn't have expected that are about ready to hit. Thanks so much, Andrew.
All right, thanks.